You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carl Matchett. How are you, sir?
Full of magnificence. What about you?
I'm okay. Just okay. International football, particularly friendlies, are the bane of my life. Mm. I hate them with a passion.
Inclined to agree entirely, although, as mentioned before, build up to the Euros, some nations we've steadfastly ignored the existence of for the past 2 years. Some of them longer than that if they didn't get to Qatar. I think this time around was the one for me to delve back into.
Yeah, so I'm hoping for good European championships. I think Qatar, there was a lot to like about that World Cup in terms of the drama, some of the results, obviously Argentina winning it in the manner that they did. It was a pretty good final. A great final for the last, 20 minutes of normal time and extra time and the penalty shootout. Before that, it was, it was just okay. But that came off the back of a decent European Championships, which ended in a fantastic way for everybody. So hopefully now we can continue this with some decent international competition. So let's focus on that first, before we work through what's taken place over the last week and a half or so. So the draw is now final for Euro 2024, which obviously will take place in Germany from the 14th of June to the 14th of July. 24 teams in 10 venues in Berlin, Munich, Dortmund, Stuttgart, Frankfurt, Gelsenkirchen, Hamburg, Dusseldorf, Cologne and Leipzig. Group A is quite an interesting group and quite a strong group. We get the host Germany, who are in a bit of a strange place right now, where there's a lot of uncertainty about the future with the manager. They've brought Toni Kroos back in, but they've had a good week. And Nagelsmann has hinted that maybe he'd be interested in sticking on as the international manager for a couple more years, which would be really good, I think, in terms of his development and in terms of giving the national team a bit of stability. You've got the Scots, who will always be a tough out. You've got a Hungarian team that are 14 games unbeaten when Dominik Szoboszlai starts. And then you've got Switzerland, who beat Ireland during the week, and I hope they lose every game for the rest of their lives, but are always a difficult opponent at the international level when superstars like your friend Haris Seferovic, Granit Xhaka, and Jerdan Shaqiri just seem to find performance levels that otherwise escape them at club level. What's your initial thoughts on Group A as you look at it?
My initial thoughts are Switzerland are more and more becoming the Chile of European football, very much in terms of outperformance of players at international level versus club level. It's kind of been the thing for a while with them. They do have some really interesting players who have, let's say, not reinvented themselves or anything like that, but found fitness, found a club where they can play regularly, found just a bit of a better vibe about their game, to be perfectly honest. Like Manuel Akanji, we know very close up from Man City, but before that, he'd had like three or four really difficult years, like a very good player who had a lot of injuries and really hadn't got to grips with anything at all. Dennis Zakaria obviously had that good run with Chelsea, but amid a very low-key season, which came after a bad season, which came after an ACL injury. But at Monaco, he's doing really, really well. Him and Youssef Fofana as a central midfield pairing, sensational. So a few players throughout the team who are kind of like that, it does make them, I think, a more interesting prospect. Defeat of Republic of Ireland side, obviously. Commiserations. But in general, I would still think they need quite a big upset to get top two. They can obviously finish third and go through, but really can't be bothered to work out the whole permutations of where I think the best placed third teams will come from at this stage. So for Switzerland.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that they will finish third. I have a feeling one of Scotland or Hungary are going to do a number on them, which means that they're obviously going to have to get a result against the other one. Germany should obviously be favourites by quite a considerable distance.
And yes. You would
normally get people saying either Scotland or Hungary are fighting it out to finish third, but I think one of them will finish second. Like Scotland up until this international break, no, in fact, up until the second half of the Netherlands game, I was quite impressed with them. Like I know they've not won all their games or anything like that recently, and they've been on a little bit more of a difficult run of late, but the play, the build-up play, really, really good. Like even the first half against Netherlands, first probably 55 minutes or so, they were by miles the better side. Like really, really good structure to them. Very, very good clarity about who plays where and off the ball running and the combinations and that. They just obviously lack bits in both boxes. Maybe a little bit like Wales, and we'll get to them, no doubt. But I think if Scotland are able to get, let's say, Laurent Shankland displaying some sort of club form at international level, they're going to be all right. Like, I know they didn't... Well, I don't know. I didn't watch. But I think it's widely said they didn't play well against Northern Ireland, but... In general, I really like the setup that they have. If they're able to put out their strongest lineup, I would fancy them to get one win at least at that group stage.
Yeah, I fully agree. I do fully agree. I should have pointed out that this week we had the final teams that qualified before starting into these groups. So Poland obviously beat Wales on penalties. Heartbreaking for the Welsh to go out, especially given that game was at home. Ukraine beat Iceland 2-1 to qualify. And then Georgia beat Greece on penalties. So poor old Kostas Tsimikas not getting through. So those are the final three teams to get in. But I do agree. I think Germany first. I think you're right. I think one of Scotland or Hungary will finish second, and I think the other one will finish bottom, because it's just, I look at the Swiss and I always think they're going to win one game somewhere along the way, because that's just what they do. Someone will underestimate them and they'll sneak into third and potentially then get in as one of the four best third place teams. And then the other of Scotland or Hungary, I would expect to finish bottom. I would give the nod to Hungary to finish second right now, just based on how confident they are. I think when you put them up against Scotland, they've got the best player in Dominic. That team has also been together for a couple of years. I know the Scots have as well, but I just think there's a lot of variance with the Scottish team. They've got some players in that squad that can be really good, but can also be dreadful. Like, there's such a swing in a lot of the performance. Like, Scott McTominay is one. There's games you watch him play and he'll score two goals and win you the game. There's games you watch him play where it looks like football is new to him. And I don't think he's the only one in that squad who's like that. I think Che Adams can be like that. I think Kieran Tierney is really good, but when he's off, he can be dreadful. So I think at the moment I'd go Germany, Hungary, Switzerland and Scotland. Moving to Group B then. A few years ago, we probably would have titled this the Group of Death. You've got Spain, you've got Croatia, you've got Italy and you've got Albania. Now, Spain obviously no longer the force they once were, but still have some great players. Croatia, this team has been together for so long, and there's some really good players have developed into the team, but they are still heavily reliant on the old timers. Then you've got the Italians, and you just don't know what you're going to get with them from one game to the next. And then Albania, who are an interesting team, not too many star names, but a couple like Marash Kumbula and Armando Broja will be well known to people. Thomas Drakosch, obviously, in that squad as well, though not necessarily a starter for them every game. This is an interesting group. Who would you pick to come through as the automatic qualifiers?
I think Spain. And Croatia, perhaps. I'm not massively keen on the Italy setup at the moment. I think that's still got quite a bit of work to do there. Mm. Results wise, all right, not too bad, but they haven't played amazing sides. They've won both their games this international break, but against Venezuela and Ecuador, I didn't watch either of them. I didn't really see the value in it. I don't know how much they take out of that themselves against, shall we say, notable European opponents over the last year. Results haven't been good. Drew to Ukraine and beat Ukraine 2-1, lost to England relatively heavily, lost to Spain a while back in the Nations League, did beat Netherlands, but that's June last year, so a year before the Euros take place. Netherlands mm-hmm. themselves weren't in a good spot at the time either, so I don't know that we can take oodles from where they are right at this moment. And I just think that compared to the very best of Italian teams over the last two decades, let's say, but even compared to where they were for their last Euros win, which I don't think was a vintage Italy side by any stretch of the imagination, I just think that there's quite a lot of players in this squad who are at least one level below, if not more. That's not always a decisive factor. There's a lot to be said, obviously, for a team growing together, and players obviously can get better between the ages of 22 and 24 or whatever, by quite a considerable margin. So they will no doubt be a threat, but I just don't see star factor, let's say.
No, I mean, I think there's a really good Italian team that could be put together. It's just not the team that Spalletti is going to pick. I think when you look at, say, just defensively, for example, if you were to go with Belanova as the right wing back and DiMarco as the left wing back, and then a back three of Scalvini, Bastoni in the middle, and Calafiore, I think that could be a great back five with Donnarumma behind them, and then, say, Locatelli and Barea as a double pivot. That could be a really strong team. Raspadori, Chiesa, and whoever up front. Like, there is a team there that could cause people a lot of problems. It's just that's not the team he's going to pick. So Spalletti will find his way. He's one of the better managers in the competition, I would say. And maybe that will count for something in the tournament. Maybe he can just find ways to out-coach and out-plan others. But yeah, like you, I would say Spain and Croatia, the two favourites to come out of that group automatically. And maybe the Italians sneak in as one of the third-place qualifiers. Group C then, Slovenia, Denmark, Serbia, and England. I think anything less than topping the group would be quite embarrassing for England here. The Danes have some very good players, and again, I think there's a good team to be built from that squad, and they've got a manager who does get the most out of them. Slovenia have some talent, but not a huge amount. And Serbia, I'm just never putting faith in again after how they shit the bed at the World Cup. I think there's potentially a really aggressive, really good team there. But we've seen arguably their two best players decide to just go into semi-retirement in their peaks in Milinkovic-Savic and Mitrovic, who chased the cash and went to Saudi. And I do wonder if your two best players are playing at such a low level club-wise, how is that going to translate when you ask them to step up to a significantly higher level at an international competition? They do have some good players outside of those. I really like Pavlovic, the centre-back who's at Red Bull Salzburg. Dusan Tadic is still obviously there. Filip Kostic is still there. But I'm not putting any faith in them. And right now I'm picking them to finish bottom, England to finish top. And the other two I think could go either way.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, there's a bit of a question as well over sort of the way Serbia's set up at the minute. Like you say, the two of them who are most important probably to the attacking output, being at a lower level, is also a bit of a question mark, I think. The other players like Filip Kostic, I think, has been a little bit of a lower level, possibly just as a result of being with Juventus, to be perfectly honest. Mm. But beyond Mitrovic, if he doesn't score, if he doesn't play, if you need an alternative for him, not convinced there's a huge amount there. Luka Jovic has obviously not quite hit the heights that we would have hoped for him initially.
Vlahovic they'll be heavily reliant on as well, won't they?
Yeah.
If he gets in the team.
And if he's fit for it as well, because that's been the bigger issue really over the last year or so. I guess he'll go as long as he's not completely injured, but whether you can get the best amount out of him is a much bigger question at the minute, I think.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
So we'll come back to England because I know we want to talk about the England squad, but I mean, I think they've got to be looking at 7 points as a minimum here. You know, they should beat Serbia in their opening game. They follow that up with Denmark. A draw there wouldn't be the end of the world. And then they should beat Slovenia in the final game. But England will be one of the most fancied teams in this tournament. On to Group D. Poland, Netherlands, Austria and France. France would be the heavy favourites here. I think I'd have the Netherlands going through second. But this is a tough group. Like, there's no walkover in this group. I mean, Austria and Poland, they'll play hard. They're disciplined. They're well set up. They're well organized. Poland obviously carry a goal threat when Lewandowski's in form, but he does seem to be declining quite heavily.
Yes.
And then the Austrians, I mean, again, there's a lot of talent in that squad, but it's just a matter of them being able to harness it. And I don't know that Ralf Rangnick has as yet figured out what his best 11 is.
Yeah, I've not seen Austria play since Rangnick took over. I've seen a few highlights and I've seen the comments and quotes that have been coming out of the players, and they seem overall positive, but that's, you know, its own thing when it comes to a tournament anyway, doesn't it? Austria, I think, have got the talent to beat teams, but I don't know that they are the most powerful or overall strongest. I think there's also a few question marks there still defensively of them as well, to be honest. Poland, I think, are the team who might be the most boring at this tournament, to be perfectly honest. They've improved since Michal Projec took over, but they're not good. They're not good in the slightest. They weren't impressive in their playoff final, obviously, against Wales. Didn't manage a shot on target. We're talking about a team with central defenders who were good and well-organised and, you know, resilient and all the rest of it, but they're going to be up against Van Dijk, up against Upamecano and all the rest of it in the group stage at the Euros, not against, you know, with respect, a backup centre-back for Spurs in Ben Davies as basically the best of them, and Joe Rodon, who played well in the game but is not, let's say, renowned for being...
Oh, having elite. A really good year for Leeds, though.
He is, but that's what I'm saying. He's not renowned as being an elite player, though, is
no,
he?
No, true. Really good championship defender, but not shown at the Premier League level.
Yeah, so you're going to be talking about a step up of defences you're playing against by, like, three levels minimum, really. And I think the 3-5-2 setup that he's used now is probably a reasonable one, because you need somebody else alongside Lewandowski now. There's just not the movement in his game. He's not got the power in his game. And obviously, finishing-wise, he's way off it just at the moment. Maybe he can recapture that. But for that to happen, you need to be able to give him the service. You need to have somebody else do the work for him. So another player alongside him is fine in attack. And I think using Frankowski and Zalewski as wingbacks is pretty good. That's pretty offensive-minded. But by itself, that's not enough. Like I said, they didn't create really anything of note at all. They didn't have a shot on target against Wales. Their record in terms of results away from Poland, whether that's neutral territory or an actual away game, is just shit, like properly awful. There's no other word for it. There's just minnows that they've beaten or got a result in against, like, Faroe Islands. But that's about as good as it's been away from home. Like, lost to Moldova, lost in Albania, 0-0 again, like I said, with Wales. And it goes on for like the last sort of 5 years, to be honest. Their away form is just not good. So unless there is quite a big turnaround in what they're able to produce in the final third, I have them finishing bottom.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Just as an aside on Lewandowski. So he is 35 years of age, turns 36 this summer. He obviously plays for Barcelona now, a club with enormous financial issues. How dumb of a move was it for them to sign him not long before he turned 34 for 45 million? Give him a 4-year contract that I would imagine pays him a huge amount. And how delusional were they to put a 500 million buyout into that contract?
I mean,
because right now, I don't think he should be starting for them.
No, I don't either. He's on about, by the way, €350,000 a week at Barca. That's his salary there.
What a good way to handle your €650 million debt.
Yeah. I don't think it's Barcelona's worst deal by quite a long way, but that says a lot more about Barcelona than Robert Lewandowski. He's not playing well. I don't really think he's the suited type of forward at this stage of his career to how Barca are trying to restructure themselves in terms of, you know, build up play and quite quick players in the final third, but not really a connector right behind the forward. He seems to be more and more trying to drop deep and link play rather than be the one who's finishing off things in the box, which is, you know, fine if that's what he wants to do. But again, that's not really what Barca need him for. And it's certainly not what he's in this Poland team for either, because if you did watch the game, you saw against Wales that he was taking up Zielinski's space quite a lot. There was nobody running beyond him because, who's the second forward that they were playing alongside him? Karol Swiderski was obviously running channels and trying to make other sort of movements and spaces to get the ball further upfield for Lewandowski to be in the box. And it just did not come together in the slightest. So at this stage of his career, he's probably either dropping deeper down the pitch and you need someone beyond him, or else you just tell him to stay in the box and he is a one-man poacher and everyone else plays the defensive roles for him.
Mm. Yeah, you wonder with Barca, do they need to try and get him and Victor Roque into the team together and have Roque run in behind and do that type of thing? But it's a big ask for such a young player who's still trying to find his way in the game. Anyway, back to the Euros. Group E, Belgium, who I really don't know what to make of. Some talent, some players clinging on well past the point of being useful. Obviously, a couple of big players absent at the moment, but, you know, those are injury-prone players that might be injured again by the time the Euros roll around. The great underachievers. Slovakia, Romania and the Ukraine. I think this is the most boring group of the lot.
In which case, shall we just go for, I will pick Ukraine and Belgium to go through and Slovakia to get third. I don't really know what to make of this Romania squad, to be honest. I've got minimal exposure to them, so I will have a bit of a look and maybe I'm woefully missing the point with them, but I don't know is the point, and I don't see too many of their players outperforming in Europe, so I'm going to have to go with them last at the minute.
Yeah, I think I'd be very much the same. There's a couple of talented players in that squad that seem to have hit a development wall. Follow-on Elk Coman would be one. Georgi Puskas would be another. These are players that as young players, Enes Hadji, another. When they were 17, 18, 19, these have been lauded as the next great iteration of Romanian national team players, and none of them have really developed into much of anything. Radu Dragozin is probably their best known and probably their best player. They've got a lot of players that are playing Serie B football. They've got a lot of players playing at home domestically. It's just not really a strong squad by any stretch. I do quite like Octavian Popescu, the winger for the club formerly known as Steaua Bucharest, now known as FCSB, because they're not allowed to use Steaua Bucharest because, you know, reasons.
Should probably point out they didn't lose a game in qualifying, but it was a really, really weak group.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. It was a very, very weak group. But yeah, like you said, they didn't lose a game. And that's all you can really ask of them is that they get through. And their group was STEM, Switzerland,
Israel, Belarus, Kosovo,
and Andorra. Like, I mean, and they won six and drew four. It's not like they ran the table or anything. But yeah, I mean, look, they didn't lose a game. And defensively, they were really, really solid, only conceded five goals. So, you know, maybe that's what we have to look to, is a team that's going to come and be really solid defensively, built around Dragozin, and go from there. But yeah, like you, I would expect them to finish bottom. The final group then is Group F. And this is an interesting group in a couple of ways.
Yeah.
You've got Turkey, Georgia, who qualified last night, Portugal, and the Czech Republic. Now, Portugal will be strong favourites to win the group, but I don't know, Carl. I watch them play, and I struggle with how beholden they are to Cristiano. Because when I watch them play, I just can't help but feel that if you took him out and had a front three that was maybe Gonçalo Ramos, Rafael Leão, and say Diogo Jota on the right, or Jota through the middle and Pedro Neto on the right, I just feel like that would be a much better balanced team. Then you'd have Bernardo, Bruno, and João Palhinha maybe as a midfield three, or whatever way you want to shape it up. I feel like they'd be a lot better without him on the pitch, because he doesn't do any work for the team. He rarely looks to pass anymore. He has declined enormously, regardless of what anyone wants to say. And I know he scored a bunch of goals in Saudi Arabia. Nobody cares. He actively makes his teams worse these days. He made Juve worse. He made United worse. And he's made Al-Nazir worse. And him getting his goals is to the detriment of the team's success. And I feel like it's the same thing with Portugal. I think he makes them worse. I think he scores goals and the team suffers because everybody else is trying to funnel everything to him, knowing that if they don't, they'll be on the receiving end of a temper tantrum. I also look at the defence and I see a 41-year-old Pepe. And I understand he's still playing at a decent level for Portugal. That's fine. But when you have Ruben Dias, Gonçalo Inácio, the kid Antonio Silva at Benfica, I just don't understand how Pepe is still featuring for you. In the same way, I don't understand why they're still beholden to a 39-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo and potentially ruining their opportunity at winning a major tournament. Because you take those two out, I think this is a really good squad. I do. I think goalkeeper's a big question mark. I wouldn't be a fan of any of the goalkeepers. But I think defensively, they've got really good options. Midfield, they've got great options. And in attack, I really like what they have outside of Cristiano.
I mean, we've had the Cristiano discussion a billion times, and I'm sure that they have internally as well, and there's just something which basically doesn't allow them to. But broadly speaking, if you've got forwards who, even if they're not guaranteed starters, play and play a part for Barcelona, for AC Milan, for Paris Saint-Germain, and for Liverpool, you probably don't need to start someone who can only get a game in Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. And let's be real, the reason he's in Saudi Arabia is because nobody else wanted him.
Nobody wanted him.
Do you know? And like, it's not like he's completely loyal to that club either. There was multiple reports in the summer that his agent was trying to find him a path back to Europe. And no one wants him. Because he's 39. Like, he's 39 years of age. It's incredible that he's still able to play. It's a credit to how well he's looked after himself, the investment he's made in himself and his body. But he is a detriment to his team. And until they decide that to just have him come off the bench for the last 15 minutes, and yeah, he could actually be a big positive.
Yeah, he could still play a part as a, when you need a goal, you put him on.
Yeah.
Good in the air, really good finisher still, but just don't have him running the game. Don't have him running about. Don't have him in the 70 minutes, which are most important, at the expense of people who can actually move and combine these days.
Yeah, I for me is why they will not win this competition, is because they're so beholden to him. I could see a situation where we get to the competition and Pepe won't be starting. I think it'll be probably Antonio Silva and Ruben Dias who get the nod, or Inacio might get the nod. I don't think Pepe will play. Certainly not every game in the competition. Maybe he plays one group, starts one group game. But, I mean, they've got talent everywhere other than the goalkeepers. And they're just wasting it.
Hey, guys. It's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.